Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel speeding in!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Well. Rusty, you made it through another week. Hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with another episode of The Suspendables. I always wish, Rusty, we could record right from the very beginning. Okay? Right from the very beginning. But we always kind of screw it up with you know, terrible takes on things. But we've got a guest coming on the show today. And we've been thinking about this guest for a while, but he's always so busy, literally busy with so much hockey. But we'll get to him in a second. Rusty, what happened this week? Anything with you?
Oh, just more of the same. You know, playing a little golf, cooking dinners for people, and hanging out with all my friends and family in Victoria. It's been good.
Good God. Working your ass off again, Russ, for another week. You know, God, the string is alive.
I was down at my friend Grant Olson. They own the Big Bad John's in Victoria at the Strathcona Hotel. And I was with his older brother, Craig Olson. And Ole's telling me about this super fan, Eric Kendricks, my future son-in-law, came up, who plays for the Vikings, number 54. Right. So we're talking about him, and he goes, "Oh my God, my friend who I see all the time down here is the biggest Vikings fan in the world." And I'm like, "Come on, Victoria." And in comes this guy, Robin, with a Vikings mask over his face. And so I immediately told Eric and Eric Kendricks and Anthony Barr, and they were so kind to send him video messages. I almost made the guy cry in his beer. That was one of the highlights of my last few days.
Yeah, and you're selling an island. Is it sold out yet, Gilligan? Is that where are we at with that? We all live vicariously through
76 lots, and we're still at about 14 reservations. So I think we'll get another couple in the next couple weeks.
What do I need? Maybe me and our guests will split a lot. And what do I need? What's the minimum buy-in?
You need to win the max when it was at 70 million.
Okay. Our guests can buy and I can be his friend. You know, to be a broadcaster or talent or on air personality, you better have thick skin, man. Okay. You're at the mercy of networks and ratings and management and sponsors and fans. You know, social media can be broadcasters' worst nightmare. You know, it's in a day where people have become hyper aware, sensitive to the forever changing world of what's offensive. So to survive all that, I mean, is really an accomplishment. And our guest has been doing that for well over 30 years.
Wow.
And he's got a huge job and 8 Gemini Awards, best sports broadcaster award. I stopped counting at 4. Alberta Sports Hall of Fame, Oakville Sports Hall of Fame, got a star on Canada's Walk of Fame. And he's still working today, and he is hands down got the number one sports show in Canada, and he's been doing that for years. I'm talking about Ronnie McLean. Ronnie, how are you, man? Did you ever think I'd get you?
Yeah, no, I love it, Jim. Although obviously I don't take credit for the years. Hockey Night in Canada can take a bow on that one. And it's just great to see you. Great to see Russ. Funny how you and I ran into the one another at the Edmonton airport, Jim. So that kind of jogged your memory. Oh, Ron would be good to come and join us. Thanks for your daughter who must have suggested it, but I'm pleased to be on and anytime to see Russ, of course, although keep me out of Victoria because I'm carnage.
Where to start, Ronnie, with you? First of all, what everyone knows Ron McLean. What do you do when you're not working, Ron?
Well, this has been the biggest break of all this summer. And you kind of, I think, are referencing you got to have a thick skin because God knows I went through my ups and downs in the playoffs. I just seemed to be, as Gord Downie likes to sing, no one's interested in something you didn't do. So I kept doing things that people imagined. And, you know, anyway, got myself in a jam a few times. So it was almost like I was due for a break and I got one. I was supposed to be involved in the Olympic coverage of Tokyo 2020 at Canada House. The show that I was going to be part of was a six-hour show at Canada House, interviewing parents, coaches, athletes. But obviously that went by the board when the pandemic struck. So I have the whole summer off. Didn't do the Calgary Stampede, which I normally do, because that was going to overlap with the Stanley Cup final. And then I was out of Tokyo. And so really it's been like Russ. I'm just cooking dinners and golfing. And
attaboy.
Probably was the right time for that. I just feel, you know, we're to the day, Hockey Night in Canada, as we record this, we're 2 months away still. So I may be stirred crazy inside of a week, but for the most part, really enjoying some downtime and just using it, Jim, to read. I hate to be boring, but for me, I've kind of, maybe I have to shy away from Twitter to keep my faith. But I, you know, I don't live in the ricocheting world of, you know, modern media. I kind of have reverted to enjoying reading in my spare time.
What do you read?
Well, a whole variety of things. Right now I'm reading, Kevin BX's wife is a brilliant writer, Katie. Wow. They're both Grimsby, Ontario kids, you know, high school sweethearts. And she wrote her first book, was called Newport Jane. And I read that more to get a glimpse into Kevin, right? You know, there's the old story, Robertson Davies, a great writer, once said, asking a writer if their work is semi-autobiographical is like asking a spider where it buys its thread. Of course it is. So to read Katie's books was to get a glimpse into her marriage and her husband, and to, you know, by extension, know Kevin even better. Because one of the weird things about the pandemic is I hardly see the guy. We've been together now a couple of years on Hockey Night, but mostly 5,000 kilometers apart.
Right.
So I'm reading her newest book. It's called Cedar, and it's all about mental health. So Russ, you'd be dialed right in, you know, in honor of Archie. The Kevin's dear friend was Rick Rippon. So she's a great writer. And that, I read that. I read on the way out, I read a book about the, you know, chronology of the events leading up to World War II called Human Smoke by Nicholson Baker. And it was a great book about the politicians, the press, and the pacifists, and everybody, you know, arguing over what to do and when. Good book for our times. And then I read a book called Educated by Tara Westover. So just all kind of related to our work and sort of trying to keep with the times. Even though it's books, you know, it's not modern media, but I think all great wisdom, like from Shakespeare on down, is eternal.
There's another award for you, Ron, right there. You have now single-handedly read two more books than Russ and I ever have. Okay. So
I don't know.
You had mentioned Kevin BX. I mean, so much to talk about, Ron, about your career, and where you started out and where you are today. Congratulations really on all you've done. They have you down here for 1986 when you started Hockey Night in Canada. I don't know if that's right or not. I go to the deadly accurate Wikipedia, Ron, all the time, okay, for these things. You know, you're in an ever, I talked about it, in an ever-changing world of everything that's going on. And one of them all the time, Ron, is this constant auditioning of on-air personalities, either to work for you or with you, or God forbid, replace you. But that's the grim reality of working in the broadcast world. And this year, watching all that you did, and during all the playoffs, there's about 10 people who seem to have to deal with now. You know, there was Bieksa, there was Cassie, of course, and Kelly, Botterall, and then you flip it back to two other guys, and then you go to the color guy and changing times, Ronnie.
Right, no, now. But you know, it's kind of like you had John Cooper on 11-7, right? When he didn't invent that. Glenn Sather used to do it with Gretzky. For sure, you couldn't replace Don Cherry. So from the get-go, they kind of announced, for whatever reason, they wanted to make it clear. I honestly think, Jim and Russ, that's a little bit like CBC News after Peter Mansbridge. I think the days of what they would refer to as an anchor monster or a superstar, anchor monster, if those who don't know, kind of referred to the powerful anchors of the past in the United States, whether it be on sports like a Brent Musburger or on news like a Walter Cronkite. Those figures became so powerful that it was very difficult for management to control the division. It was, you know, they kind of were a ruler of sorts. And I think to avoid having that presence, you went to teams at the anchor desks. And I think that kind of happened with Hockey Night in Canada. Once Don, you know, he was irreplaceable, of course, for what he was. The decision was made to go to the panel format, but that's kind of tired. And so what we're doing is obviously with an eye to diversity and inclusion. They definitely wanted to bring the strength of the Hockey Canada program through its women, Cassie Campbell-Pascal, Jennifer Bottrell, you mentioned. Mm-hmm. We have Anthony Stewart. We have Kelly Rudy. We have Kevin Bieksa. So we're deep field, and I don't mind it. I think, you know, the more opinions kind of saves you at times from yourself and from maybe that narrow prism. Because like you said, just because everybody's got a device now and can chime in, no longer are the pronouncements coming from the New York Times or the CBC News. They're coming from Hockey Night in Canada, but simultaneously they're coming at you in waves over social platforms. And so it's good to have a diverse group sort of with an ear or a different sensibility, because you cannot, no human can code switch to please everyone.
Right. No. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Mess and Gretz do. I think they're going to be great. I think finally, no offense to a lot of your colleagues, but we're the only sport that doesn't have Hall of Fame players on TV. And I think it's going to be great. And it's no slight against the guys and women that are doing it. They're really good at it. But now we're going to finally have some of our best players ever of our era out giving their opinions, and hopefully they have a good team around them. And I think they'll shine. And most, I always say athletes are, you put a mic in front of an athlete, they can ask questions. 99% of the players can answer the questions, but 99% of athletes can't get up and speak in front of a crowd unless they have that person interviewing them. And I really hope they're great. I think they will be, and it's going to be exciting to see how they do.
It always cuts two ways. Like, both are great storytellers. That whole 84 Edmonton team, and I call them the 84 team because that's the initial cup. But they're just loaded with all the ingredients of a good story. You know, they had characters, they had troubles, they had triumphs. So the stories just never end with them. And Wayne especially has always been able to apply it. I remember him just popping in for an interview during either the 2012 or 2014 Cup in LA, and he just jumped on the set, you know, unexpectedly. And he could weave a story, whether it was Blue Jay centric or Mike Weir centric. It didn't matter. His you know, knowledge of everything that's going on in our world is beyond the pale. Mark is more the spiritual guru. So he can bring that dimension, which is fantastic. And I think you always have to play to your strengths. You know, one of the problems back when George Strombolopoulos tried to do Hockey Night in Canada is they didn't really give him a shot to do what he's good at, which is interview. He had an interview format with a Gretzky, oh my God, you know, he'd have been on his way. So you have to know what you've got. These guys are storytellers. And as long as you give Wayne, like we gave Don, 7 to 8 minutes, you can't do 2.5 minutes, go to commercial, come back, do 2.5 minutes, go to commercial. You know, everything that happens at warp speed isn't really Wayne's forte. Wayne is, as I said, a gifted storyteller. So give him that opportunity. And I think he'll just be brilliant. And back to, you know, Russ's point, you're right. I always enjoy Dennis Potvin as being one of the lone analysts on the air who was the guy. He was the guy who could say to Eric Carlson, Eric, your Ottawa's behind in this game. It's on you now to change the, you know, tempo of this game, because he knew.
Yeah.
Very few, you know, and I mean, Kevin knows, and all the teachers. What's good about our crew is they're teachers. They have academies. They coach well. You know, Wayne struggled to coach, as you know, Russ, because he said, God, I couldn't connect to the fourth liner. That used to be my meat. I'd bring that fourth liner to the bar. I'd bring him to dinner. I'd bring him to, you know, the golf course. I made him part of our team. And in his 6 minutes, he felt like he was contributing. But I didn't do well telling the guy he was playing 6 minutes when I got to be a coach. But he'll be great on TV as a storyteller.
Right, yeah. He will be. I think it'll be tough for him if it's analysis, you know, if he's breaking games down. I'm not sure how they're going to use him or specifically how they're going to do it. But he's such a nice guy, Ron. And he does not like saying anything negative about anyone.
But you don't have to, Jim. And that's another thing. You know, you just be true to yourself. You know, that's the biggest thing I would watch over the years. You know, I've been at it 40 years. I cringed when a director said, turn to the camera. And I cringed when a producer said, you know, be ready to be critical. Well, be critical if you're good at critical. You know, if you're Charles Barkley or that kind.
Right.
and I don't even know if Charles Barkley's critical, but the for sure, Wayne, his strength is knowing how to shape the criticism. He can find what is challenging about a circumstance, how he, you know, historically worked with Brian Leach or whomever to get around it. Mm-hmm. And he's good at it. He's a very good, sharp analyst, incredibly incisive about everything from how you handle a stick to, you know, how you work your edges. You know, he's very detailed if he wants to be. Mm-hmm. I think he'll be sensational. Mm-hmm.
Taking nothing away, Ronnie, from your other host, your co-hosts, that whole gang, this Kevin Bieksa looks like he might be a star.
I agree.
What do you think about that?
Well, he's just, again, I remember the first show we ever did, I got into Pyramid Power, Red Kelly, Toronto history. And he started talking about aquifers. He knew the actual science of how a pyramid power, you know, happens. So he's part physicist. Right away, he was teaching us that a right-hand shooter, you know, passing a puck to a right-hand shot, that's a spin on the puck that creates greater velocity than if a left-hand shooter passes the puck to a righty. And yeah, he's got the physics behind his, he's got great sensibility. Like I said, Rick Rippon tells you all you need to know about his concern for mental health. Mm-hmm. So he's got a big heart. I mean, he understood the, you know, how to fight. He fought 60 times in his NHL career. Yeah, he had a Superman punch, right? He had a little trick up his sleeve that caught most people like a lefty does. And that's, you know, so back to, it's nice to have the Hall of Famer, but often the Hall of Famer can't explain what they did. You know, they didn't study it. They didn't have to. Whereas the guy like Kevin, who, you know, comes out of college at Bowling Green and just, you know, makes a career for himself, had to think through and through what was going on. And before you know it, he's one of the two power play units and he's just, you know, a captain. And so he's played an absolutely central role to the success of the teams he's been a part of. And, yeah, he's got a command of the language. He right away, he was saying to the producers, give me 15 seconds on camera before you roll the clip, just so I can set this up. And I mean, this is like, who does that when they're starting out?
Yeah,
yes. Right? So he's great. And as I said, Jen and Cassie bring with them the immeasurable knowledge of Hockey Canada's program. And of course, Jen was Harvard.
Olympians, you know,
and Olympians. And so they're qual. And Anthony's a very funny, dry, he's great on social media, does his memes or whatever the hell they are. And he's got a, you know, he will settle in. Poor Anthony's been thrown in a chair that's over in the corner of the room looking at the, you know, everyone else. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy. You know, he didn't get the comfort of the desk because sitting at the desk is right away a little more like everybody stands. I don't know why everybody stands, but it's like you're at the front door and they're not letting you in. please let them sit down so they can get comfortable, but they don't. And he's dynamite. And Kelly's Kelly, of course, Russ.
Right. You know. Yeah. Kelly's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kevin, I get more people coming up and talking to me about Bieksa.
Yeah.
Than anybody. There's so many fans out there. They love his humor.
Yes.
They love his knowledge. I think we all loved him as a player. You know, everybody respected him and he did it the hard way. You know, he came up kind of similar to my brother, Jeff. You know, nothing was given.
Right.
And tough and a good team guy. And I think when he did the retirement speech for the Twins in Vancouver.
Again. Right.
It was phenomenal. Like he was on the stage and he congratulated them, roasted them. He was tremendous. And he's only going to get better, as you know. Look at Kelly from start to now. I mean, he's just, he got better every year. I mean, all the guys and girls that are on there, they get better with practice and totally. Years of experience.
There's no substitute for experience.
Yeah. Right. Well, all you got to do, and I hope it works out for, I was watching the, I still call it the Canadian Open tennis. I think it's called the National Bank as a sponsor. And Jeannie Bouchard, they've brought her in to do color. And, all you got to do is watch that, her first show of that and go, oh, good God, I hope this works out because there's, you know, they're so nervous. And as you say, Ronnie, to get sort of thrown to the wolves, right. To be able to do this. And,
but not Kevin. For whatever reason, just like the Sedin's night, you know, like most of us would be dripping in our own self-importance and having been a part of the magic of the Sedinery, and you'd get out there, you know, and not him. I mean, him, it was just like a bunch of us invited over for beers and around, you know, a backyard campfire. He has got such a great perspective. There is no status anxiety in the guy. And you know, that's the secret. You know, when you have somebody who's more interested in the, you know, the laughter and the love,
right?
Boy, can't miss.
Can I use my first pun, Ronnie?
Certainly. I'd love that.
Yeah. You just did it, but I want to use it. So if you're a Vancouver fan for the last 20 years, you must have really enjoyed the Sedinery.
Very no? That's what Russ is selling now. And I can't even buy it. Sylvan Lake, Alberta. I'm just in Sylvan Lake and I can't afford property there. So Lotto Max or otherwise, I can't get to Victoria. I wish I could.
Ronnie, how have you done it? How have you survived 40 years? You know, I ask you that or another way would be if you're, you know, if you're advising some kid and there's a million of them coming at it all day long, like I said, auditioning for these jobs and throwing their names in there. What would you say to that kid, Ronnie, or how have you done this all these years?
Well, you were right about the thick skin. That helped because I've had my, you know, I had a lot of anxiety issues when I was young. I had panic attacks and thought I was like everybody else back in the day, especially thought I was the only one in the world that vulnerable, that weak. But I so that didn't help. I can remember the second time I hit the stage for the NHL award and now here's Ron, you know, and I was just terrified and I didn't think I could get two words out. And I finally got, I mumbled a half joke out and bought myself a little bit of time. And I mean, you know, Jim, just like the same with one day at a time, it's almost like, you know, choosing not to drink, you know, when it becomes no longer a friend, it's just, you got to gut it out. You've got to go every day into it again, knowing, you know, that everybody's scrutinizing you a little more carefully because you've just been on the national news, you're in hot water. And I've been in so many, you know, hornet's nests through the years. And I just sort of say, okay, well, get over yourself. What were you really here to do? You were here to toast Shea Weber and Carey Price tonight or Ben Sherratt. Get back to that. Get back to the connection that the viewer has with the game. Get back to the, you know, joy that sports brings and then prepare. You know, the obviously advice that I give all young broadcasters is you never take it for granted. You never become satisfied. You just endlessly work at it, thinking of what you could do. And it's tough when you have, you know, eight people in 4.5 to 5 minutes to contribute, but you can find a way. If you really think about it, you can find a way to and trust yourself because Lord knows if you don't, there's enough people with an opinion on how you should do things. But you just, like I said, that in academia, it's called code switching where you try to speak to, you know, the sensibility of your listener. So right now I have you, expert comedian, broadcaster. I have Russ, you know, NHLer. I know the language of us three, but I got to realize there's somebody listening that isn't us three. And in the old world, that was immaterial, but in the new world, it's not. In the new world, and this is the great challenge to all of us, they have space in our conversation. So you really, you know, we're learning on the fly on that one.
Who taught you all that, Ronnie?
My reading is for sure all about ethics. And I always come from, you know, back to the ultimate wisdoms are funny enough, born of conversation. Shakespeare, everything in his work is about conversation imparting wisdom. So King Hal, Hamlet, he had Falstaff, his valet or assistant.
Sure.
Those two would have debriefs. It wasn't the soliloquies. It wasn't the actual story that was the wisdom. It was the conversations those two had. Don Quixote, the first great novel, was about a former teacher who wanted to be a knight. He's 70 years old. He wants to be a knight and go out and save damsels in distress and cure ills. And he tries and he fails miserably. And they say, well, you need a squire. You need a valet. So he gets a peasant farmer, Sancho Panza. And then the talks that those two have become the wisdom. And it's no different than Russ, you, Paris, me, sitting around with Glenn Anderson or Barney Bentall or whatever twisted group we end up with and talking. That's you learn is the great teacher. And so you learn that you don't discount anyone's view. It's weird because it's a, you know, everything's a pronouncement now. And especially in Twitter, it's in 140 characters, but I learned that a long, slow conversation is the greatest gift.
Cool. Cool. If someone saw you for the first time, Ron, do a broadcast of a hockey game or games, you know, during playoffs, for example, and they heard you, there's no doubt in my mind, 100% of all the people who would listen to you or experience you doing that broadcast would come away and go, oh my God, how much work did this guy put into that with your knowledge of things and facts and how fastidious you are about the show itself. And then when you get to sit down, if I sat down with him and said, okay, here, not only that, he's going to do it every night. Okay. That prep sounded like it would take 8 hours, and then join him again tomorrow night with two different teams, many different stories. And then, Ronnie, I get to tell them that you do it all with no notes, without any notes. And then they stop believing me. They all ask me, Jim, are you back on the blow again? Is that what's happening? Okay, because that is just unbelievable. But talk about that, Ronnie, because it's not unbelievable and it's true, isn't it?
Well, that's just short-term memory, really good short-term memory. And I think like a lot of us, if I write it out a little bit, I don't write everything out, but I certainly give myself point form directions to try and shape a story. Like the end of the Stanley Cup, I usually close with some kind of a monologue. And so I prepare and prepare. And by the time I get to air, it's just in there, you know? So you again, that's the work. And the preparation, like I was involved for a short time. I got involved in a neat little service, was ideal for the pandemic, called Memo. And there's other ones like it. Do you know what Memo is? It's you could hire Jim Jerome or Russ Cortinel to do a birthday greeting. I got $45 and I would do a little video on my phone and send it out.
Sure.
So I would get all these requests. Like I was getting upwards of 100 a day. I couldn't do that, right? I was, people understand, it takes me like 15 to 20 minutes to prepare each one. Right. I was setting my alarm for 6 a.m.
You weren't charging enough.
No, I screwed up, right? And then once I'd set the bar, I realized that that my customer, and for God, I hate the word my customer, but the folks who were kind enough to give me $45 for a greeting, 60 bucks, but 15 went to the company. So it just seemed like that's my kind of person.
Sure.
that I'm not, I'm not just reaching elites or business people or leaders. I'm reaching everyone with that fee. I can't go up. So I had to give it up. I hated to give it up because it was a neat, as I said, during the pandemic when no one was traveling and couldn't see their parents or couldn't see their loved ones, it was a fun way to connect. And I loved putting together the story. You know, I love just creating a little something, an anecdote that they could have for forever. And that is the joy of what the three of us do.
Right.
Jim, I'm on Memo and Cameo, and they send you a paragraph of what they want, like a happy birthday. You were my dad's favorite player. Right. So-and-so sick. Somebody needs cheering up, but a lot of it's birthday, but it's from old fans. And so you give them 1 minute. I give them 45 seconds to a minute. And I have a lot of my jerseys hung in my garage in LA. So whatever team they're a fan of, I go out there and then have the camera with the jersey in the background. But I haven't done a lot, they're nice. They're neat requests. And I can only imagine how many people in Canada would want Ron, especially at 60 bucks.
Russ,
Ron, I'm at 60 bucks for crying out loud.
You were part of, remember I showed during the playoffs, I think it was during the playoffs, I showed you steamrolling Mike Vernon.
Yeah.
So that was a discovery I made doing those memos. Like I went back to relive the 89 Stanley Cup game 6. And we all know Lanny scored. And we all know he also had two big hits on Larry Robinson. And we know it was a great game. But I'd forgotten you steamrolling Vernon. I don't know how, but there you go. So Jim, I don't remember everything, but once I saw it, and then I saw Rick Natras withhold, he's ready to punch Russ. Oh, yeah. He's so mad. But he doesn't, he doesn't take a penalty. And I would show that to kids. I would show that, discipline. I hate discipline over emotion also, because it just sounds so, perfect. But I learned so much building these clips. I would show a lot of Mike Weir. I would show Jamie McCowan when Vancouver beat Toronto in 1994. It was in the fifth game in double overtime. Greg Adams scored, and Felix Potvin was the Leaf goalie, and he crumples into the net. And then Jamie McCowan stands over Potvin, and the rink attendant has come out and he's pushing the net off to try and get out of there and go home and have a drink. And it's just McCowan and Potvin for the longest time. And it's a little glimpse into McCowan, because here's a guy that won the cup at Calgary. He won the cup in Detroit. That's what it takes. That kind of love and respect for your teammate. It was just, I could watch it for, it's one of those make you cry kind of moments. And Jeff was a big part of it, of course, and on the Vancouver side. And I just love that. And I would send those memos with that little highlight to people to remind you of what makes hockey good.
I do an impression of you, Ronnie, when I do my gigs, by the way. Okay. Yes. I don't, you and I go way back. We probably met through Russ or Gretz or something way back when. I think maybe in Victoria when Russ first started that. And then when I get to do gigs, I get to do my impression of Ronnie McLean. And you just kind of showed it there where you're talking about, you know, you recalled the 84 Cup and Jamie McCown over this guy and that. So I said, you know, so a normal guy, Ronnie, would just go, so goal by Ethan Morrow. Great goal. Okay. Now, if it's Ronnie McLean, okay, it's like, that's a goal by Ethan. Before we get to his last name, let's talk about his aunt and uncle who live on Main Street, two doors in, okay, across from the butcher, Bernie Gallardo, okay, who went down. And of course, his graduation when he did it with honors with a 78.2. It's Morrow. You know, fuck, it's just amazing, Ronnie, what you do know.
Ethan Morrow was drafted by Chicago. Jack Davison scouted him. And Jack lives in Oakville, where I live. And he is the pro. He was the former pro. God love him, he's gone now, but he was the pro at the club I belonged to in Oakville. So is it my fault that I'm this old and all these people are intersecting?
I'm laughing, sorry. Excuse my language, Stevie, our producer. I said laughing. Okay, leave the other part in. Because I didn't give you a heads up, folks, the good listener here. I didn't tell Ronnie I'm going to ask about Ethan Morrow. Fantastic stuff, Ronnie.
But it's a problem because nowadays nobody has time for a story that weaves 4,000 minutes and circles back, you know. So I got to watch. And furthermore, you know, when I tell stories from the 80s or the 90s, there's a glazed look on half the audience because they're too young. It's right. Crazy.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Hey, Ron, are you still sailing?
No, not so much, Russ. No. We have Pat, my buddy that, you know, you went on a trip to Croatia, yeah. Paul Coffey and Russ in Paris, and we're all over at Stephanie. We're all in fundraising for Olympic athletes. And my sort of second in command is actually the skipper, a buddy here in town called Pat Festing Smith. And we own a boat together. We're trying to get out of it, Russ. If you want to buy it, it's over in Annapolis. It's a beautiful 57-foot monohull, but nobody wants a monohull. They all want catamarans nowadays.
So
we're having trouble moving the boat because it's a five partner, you know, thing. And it's just
a beautiful boat.
Yeah. It's such a beautiful boat, but I could have got there this summer, but we're trying to sell it. I guess maybe a British Virgin Islands had a bit of a outbreak. So I don't know if we'd have been able to go down and sail there, but yeah, sailing. I crewed Jim for a bunch of the 1990s. I raced on a really competitive two-time Lake Ontario boat of the year called Step On It. And I was in the middle of the boat working the pit. So I would be in charge of tweaking all the lines and helping set the spinnaker and pack the spinnaker on the downwind legs. And what a great team sport that is. So you ultra-focused for the length of a race, which could be anywhere from a couple of hours to an overnighter. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, beer after that.
Attaboy. Well, with the story with your yacht that you have, the 57-footer. It sounds to me like that ship has not sailed.
Good.
No.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm brutal. Yeah, no. Ronnie, what were you like? One of my favorite stories, Stevie, our producer, would know. We did the morning show together and we interviewed you several times over those 12 years that I was on there. Gary Galley came in and started doing some stuff. And my favorite Gary Galley story was he didn't know how to work the mute button, Ron. Okay. On air. And he was really, you know, he was just starting out and, you know, they were talking about, you know, it's a call-in show. It's now TSN 1200 and it was a call-in show. It was called The Team back then. And he was taking calls. They wanted to get rid of Bonk and hosts and all these guys. You know, the fans are freaking out about this. And he goes, well, maybe, you know, that might be something to consider whether we should trade Bonk or Hossa, but they're both, you know, fantastic, wonderful hockey players. Anyway, we'll talk more about that. We'll be right back after this commercial. And he leaves his mic open and he goes, they got to get rid of fucking Bonk. They got to get rid of Hulse. He's a piece of shit. It was the second day broadcasting or something. I've done it, Ronnie, over your career. So many highlights, but we love to hear about
screw-ups. Yeah.
Some fun moments.
Well,
you worked with grapes. What did he say off air that you might say, don't say that grapes?
Where do I even begin? You know, it was funny. We were just with Glenn Sather and the Oilers doing a charity workout in Edmonton. And one of my favorites, one of the first times that I was slack jawed, and you know, there were a million, but And I say that lovingly. You know, I enjoyed the mischief and I enjoyed the trouble we were getting ourselves into. As I said, times have changed and caught up with us. But anyway, back in 1990, we're doing the Stanley Cup. And at the start of the playoffs, Boston is a better team than Edmonton. Edmonton kind of worked their way through. They lost Gretzky. You know, they're fighting through the Winnipeg series to begin their 1990 playoffs. And they get through it in seven. And I mean, a guy like Mark Lamb is a standout. So they're not the team, sure, but they're still great. And they get to the final against Boston, who are favorites. And Don Cherry, being the old Boston coach, he picks Boston to win in six games.
Sure.
So the first two games, Edmonton wins. Triple overtime, Peter Klima. You remember that one? He scores in the first game to give Edmonton a lead in the series. They win the second game. Now they're coming home for game three at Edmonton. And on the off day, Glenn Sather invites Don Cherry and myself. I can't go because I have family from Red Deer visiting in Edmonton. But yeah, he gets Don Cherry and takes him down to Banff, where Glenn owns, like Russ and the Courtney's own Vancouver Island.
Yeah.
Glenn Sather owns Banff. And a friend of his, Craig Allen, is throwing a party. And so Don Cherry goes with Scott Mellenby. His father, Ralph, was a producer at Hockey Night in Canada. Ralph Mellenby, Don Cherry go with Glenn Sather to Craig Allen's place in Banff.
Right.
At that house, there's a bull terrier dog, which is the same dog that Don owns. Don is a bull terrier, legendary blue. Right. Well, this one is called Watson. And Don sits down on the sofa at Craig Allen's home. Watson, in an Oilers sweater, is positioned on his lap, and they take a photograph of Don with Blue in an Oilers sweater. Now, recall, Don has predicted Boston would win the Stanley Cup, and they're down 2-0 in the series entering Game 3. So the morning of Game 3, the Edmonton Sun publishes that photo that Glenn Sather took. And so I go on the coach's corner on Hockey Night in Canada. I say, well, Don, you know, we all know you predicted the Bruins would win the series. Here they are, down 2-0, coming to Edmonton in a lot of trouble. And suddenly, I don't know if it's a turncoat performance or how you want to explain it, but there's a photo in the Edmonton Sun of you with Blue wearing an Edmonton Oilers sweater. And Don says, something awful has happened to me. And the way he put his head down, I knew I was being set up, right? You know, and he says, this is one of the worst, I mean, a lot of slings and arrows coaching, you know, over the years, but never had nothing like this happen to me. You know, what happened is I go, you go to a party, some dame sits on your lap, some guy takes a photograph. The worst part is they run that in the Toronto Sun too. And Blue back home in Mississauga, she's seen the photograph. It's not my girl Blue, by the way. That's a friend of Glenn's. Watson is her name. It's not Blue, but Blue doesn't know what's going on. She's seen me with another bull terrier. She's seen me with the Edmonton Oilers sweater. She's devastated. Rose says she's been over in the corner of the dining room all morning, hasn't moved, won't eat her breakfast. Reporters are calling the house wanting to know how come I'm cheering for Edmonton. Blue won't talk to the reporters. That's not like my girl. Anyway, Blue, I know you never miss Coach's Corner. It's the only worth watching here on Hockey Night in Canada. I know you're watching right now, and I just want you to know that bitch didn't mean a thing to me. And
lovely, Donnie.
When he said it, it was like, you can't say that. The crew broke down laughing, and in the old Edmonton Coliseum, all around the corridor, you could hear people burst out laughing. And yeah, that's one of the first times that I was kind of, are we done? You know, is that 3 years over and out?
full eight count. Cherries down.
I'll tell you another, Jim. This is
for sure, Ronnie.
Because we were with Brian Burke. He was doing part of this. The whole gist of the fundraisers through Red Deer and Edmonton were when Kevin Lowe once challenged Brian Burke to a fight over the signing of Dustin Penner from Anaheim.
Yeah.
So that became kind of the running gag that we were featuring. Anyway, the 2007 Stanley Cup, we're doing Anaheim and Ottawa. And we're driving back and forth to what was then called the Arrowhead Pond. Don Cherry and I, Don in the passenger seat doing nothing as usual. I'm driving. And I can't stand the 405. Russ, I don't know how you
are. Oh, it's brutal.
Yeah, so I had to find a back road to get from the Marriott over to the Arrowhead Pond. And I did. I found almost a dead straight drive. It took us about 40 minutes, but no problem. And anyway, on the way each time to the morning skates, to the games, to the off day practices, there was a woman over on the left-hand side of the road in an abandoned parking lot selling black velvet paintings. Mm-hmm. And she was, nice looking. She had kind of Emmylou Harris platinum hair and big silver hoop earrings and a black halter top and faded blue jeans and really attractive.
Strong look, Ron.
Probably a 55-year-old woman. And But nobody was buying her paintings. And I, you know, we had seen this now all through game one, two and the off days. And now we're heading over there for game five. And I said to Dawn, you know, I see that woman sitting here in the sun day after day in that parking lot. Nobody comes to see her. She's trying to sell these paintings. And for whatever reason, I'm sure her life is great, but there's a kind of a melancholy about it that reminds me of a song by the Eagles called The Last Resort. And in The Last Resort, there's a lyric that I love that says, call someplace paradise, kiss it goodbye. And I said to Dawn, do you have a like a song lyric that kind of forever resonates that you really like? And Dawn says, yeah, oh, I don't know. I always like that Put Your Camel to Bed.
Oh, no.
I said, Put Your Camel to Bed, Maria Muldaur, Midnight at the Oasis is your favorite song lyric of all time? Yeah, I just kind of like the idea of the sheikh saying to her, or the woman saying to her sheikh, you know, enough with the chores, get in the tent. And this is the conversation we're having going over for game five of the Stanley Cup. And anyway, I said, you know, Maria Mulder's Canadian. And that was her one hit, one and only hit, one hit wonder. He says,
there you go.
And I says, yeah, she just couldn't get over the hump.
Oh, stop. There we go. There we go, Ronnie. Yeah. Midnight at the Oasis. Yeah, send Man. Your camel to bed. I remember that.
Written by a Buddhist, David. Oh, God. Nick,
of course you'd know this.
Okay. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But anyway, that's one of my favorites.
Wikipedia's got nothing on you.
Ronnie, what for those of us who watch the telecasts and the broadcast of the games, walk us through your day. You know, you live in Toronto, under normal circumstances.
It's changed a little, Jim, because we used to broadcast from the rink and we used to go to the morning skates. Russ, back when you played in Toronto, mm-hmm. we would actually go and attend, the practices on game days, especially on the road. We always did that. And Don and I continued that. I haven't been on the road since Don, for playoffs is when we travel.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. That happened in November of 2019. And then the pandemic hit about, 3 months later. So, but a normal game day, it really consists of just getting up and, because we're hosting out of the CBC, I go in around 1 o'clock during the pandemic. I was hosting because we had no hometown hockey. You know what that is? Rogers Hometown Hockey is a show. Mm-hmm. It's going to be on Mondays this year just to get a better Canadian schedule, of games, better, matchups, Toronto, mm-hmm. Vancouver. So we would do a kind of a glorified Zoom, meet and greet. I would do that 1 o'clock on game day Saturday. And then I would wait around for 4:30. We would meet with the crew. First of all, with, Kevin and Cassie and Kelly, and just kind of go over the pregame show and things that we were going to look at in it, mm-hmm. and then go to air. But, it's less than it used to be. When we were at the arena, which I miss,
had that. Talking to the players.
That's right. And now, honestly, during the pandemic, God, I went to Montreal for games 3 and 4 of the final and didn't see a soul. I didn't see the producer, didn't see Kyle Bukauskas, didn't see anybody. But we were in our own little bubble. We had a funny moment though for a Vancouver fan here. So Alex Burrows and I got into it years ago when I was just I was trying to do a little expose on supplementary discipline. So suspendables. I was trying to do how it works and how if you don't have a record, and they keep saying, he's off the hook because he doesn't have a record. I say, yeah, but look at what Alex has done over his career. I mean, he's gone after Habib Boulin on timeouts. He's done this. He's done that. Jared Smith and this. And I did a real number on all the little transgressions that might have been suspension worthy. And yet you keep saying, this time it was Colin Campbell, you keep saying, Coley, he doesn't have a record. But I mean, and so anyway, I outraged all of Vancouver because it was a kind of an attack, it seemed, on Alex Burrows. Even I was just using him as an example. My bad. I shouldn't have picked a Canadian team player. After game 3 of the Stanley Cup in Montreal this year, we went out to a nice little after hours. It's not an after hours. It's actually a legitimate wine club where people go and do business networking. It's called Le Parloir, and it's Sandrine is a dear friend of Alex Burrows. Alex got us in. So it's funny how the world turns, yeah, right? He was my host with the most, and we went and had lovely wine, and Kevin and, kind of held court, and he didn't come. Alex didn't actually come out, because they're in the final, but he set it all up for us. And I just thought there's a good moral.
So maybe he's not holding a grudge.
No.
It's all right. Yeah. It'll be all right.
There's probably police outside the door waiting to bust me at, imbibing after hours. Yeah.
Ronnie, what's going to happen with broadcasting and broadcasting live sports? It's been ever changing.
you know, with streaming and, you know, trying to get young kids involved. You know, I do another little curling thing with Kevin Martin and the numbers are down, you know, from people watching it. They've got that forever struggle going on. And they're talking about, they got to introduce gambling. They got to make it interactive when kids mm-hmm. come to games. What do you see down the road, Ronnie, if there needs to be changes or adaptions?
That's the big one. We are going to be a bookie, a glorified bookie, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your take. So that is, as I said at the beginning, everything is now happening, not just vertically, where it's a pronouncement from a source. It's now happening horizontally with everybody having a voice. Right. And the interactive betting is an enormous aspect to it. And, you know, on the one hand, I don't know where I have this righteous indignation about that, but it's never felt quite right to me, but you can't fight City Hall. This is the new world order, and it will be a part of, it isn't what makes sport great. You know, the Olympics here, we had 24 medals in Canada, and it was a real stumble start, as it was in Vancouver in 2010. A lot of things were conspiring to make the Vancouver Olympics seem like they didn't belong. And then it mm-hmm. ended up being one of the great unifying times in our country. So sport for the sake of itself, I think, will always win the day. You know, Russ knows Lawton and Ali are great athletes, and they just love the challenge of it. And that isn't necessarily good TV, but I think it is. I think it's still, you know, the shared experience of knowing that every part of the country is watching. The, you know, Canadian women's soccer team did it again. Mm-hmm. They're a kind of a special lesson always. So I think it'll survive, but I think you've unlocked the absolute, the new world order is gambling. Right.
So the Ronnie McLean legacy, how do you want to go out, Ron? I mean, you could have gone out 20 years ago, not because you're bad, just because you accomplished so much in 20 years. But
There's no plan. Unfortunately, Jim, I don't know how you are, but I just stumble along, you know, from one disaster to the next. It don't have time to think about that. You know, like I hope there's a little bit of, I don't know if it's Buddhism, but there's a little bit of being in the now for me. That takes care of everything. Dwelling on past or present or future, I should say, is the only worry, you know, like, and when you're busy, I've had too much time probably to think about such things, but no legacy, don't care about it. As I say, I associate that with status anxiety, and that's the big reckoning we're in right now. It's a struggle for us all to figure out what is good, what is bad about what we're doing in our world. But at the end of the day, I think the reckoning that's taking place is just a sense of all of us finding a place that's in the now, and not everybody gets to be in the now because they can't afford it. So we're having a little bit of combination of class warfare and lots of other warfares to try and bring us all together.
Ron, all you need to do is just follow my lead when I played hockey and just tell everybody you can, if I can do this for another 6 years, and just tell them that every year, another 6 years. Yeah. And then eventually that last year will come.
That's right.
And that's how I always, you know, when I played, people would always ask me, and probably every athlete they ever met, you know, how many mm-hmm. years do you think you can play or want to play? And thinking and wanting are two different things. But we love Canada, loves you, and we hope you do it forever. And the guys like Jim who are assholes that ask you, just tell them 6 more years.
Is that, you know what? I was going to be nice, Russ, but then I can't help but leave it with this. Okay. So Ronnie, you should follow in Russ's career and never win a Stanley Cup. Okay. Yeah. You could do that. Okay. Ronnie, this was great, man. Fantastic to have you on. We want to do it. As I say, I could have you on every week, you know, with so much that you have to say. And congratulations, Ronnie, on just a phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal career as a broadcaster. You are the best. You are the best, and we really appreciate you coming on.
Well, you're a dear friend, Jim, and a good man, and Russ, same thing. You know,
thank you.
It was a pleasure. Continued success with this.
Thanks a lot, Ronnie.
The Suspendables is a weekly podcast series featuring former NHLer Russ Courtnell and host Jim Jerome. Join us for new episodes available each Wednesday morning. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to subscribe and review or share the show with your friends and followers. Check out our website today, thesuspendables.com.